What about the ladies?
Colleagues, ladies, and members of the force, good morning. Today we are supposed to deal with Arms Corps, but unfortunately Arms Corps could not be able to be available. So our program has changed, and we will be dealing with progress on the recommendations of the report. Now, we remember that in the past we received the report from the commission. Now, today it is a way in which we could be able to find out to what extent have some of the recommendations been incorporated, and the extent to which some of the recommendations have already been put into practice. So we will call upon firstly members of the force to introduce themselves. I suppose you'll be making the presentation. That's right. You can kindly introduce the delegation.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Our delegation today is headed by myself. I'm Lieutenant General Ramlakhan, Surgeon General. On my left is Dr. Kameda. She's the Chief of Defense Policy and Strategic Planning. To her left is Major General Zindani, who is acting Chief of Corporate Service, and followed by Brigadier General De Wit, who represents Chief of Human Resources. Brigadier General Janssen represents himself as Director Planning and Assistant General. And on his left, representing the Chief of Logistics, is Brigadier General Masters. Our presenter today, Chairperson, is Rear Admiral Junior Grade Alan Green. He will be making a presentation. It is important, I think, at the outset to state that a lot of the responses to the findings of the Service Commission started way back at the beginning of last year, and what we will be presenting today is a abbreviated, given time constraints, an abbreviated version of what has taken place over effectively 18 months. So, with your permission, Chairperson, the presentation to be made by Rear Admiral Junior Grade Alan Green.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. This is sincerely a privilege, and I'd like to start off this presentation by just indicating what I'm going to cover through an introduction, then the feedback, the conclusion, and then the ensuing discussion. Chair, it's always important for us to start off with the SANDF mandate, because the primary objective of defence is to defend and protect the Republic, its territorial integrity, and its people, in accordance with the Constitution and the principles of international law regulating the use of force, because that's what our business is all about. The International Defence Force Service Commission made a number of recommendations in the final report submitted to the Honourable Minister of Defence and Military Veterans. These recommendations relate primarily to matters that came to their attention during their discussions on the service conditions of the members of the SANDF. And these recommendations will be discussed in terms of progress that is being made in each case. The initial progress made in terms of these recommendations was communicated to the members of the Commission at a ministerial work session in February this year, as indicated by General Ramlakhan. This is a reflection of the document, Chair, that you referred to that was published earlier. So if we get to the first recommendation that was made, and that concerned the relationship between military command and the Defense Secretariat. The progress that we've made there is now published because the SANDF strategic plan has been presented independent of the Secretariat plan as a first step to ensure that boundary management between the military command and the Defense Secretariat is achieved in terms of the delineation of the roles and functions. There's much progress being done to make this delineation clear, and an example of that is that our financial, the CFO, as part of the Secretariat supporting the accounting officer, has also provided that service to Chief of the SANDF. That's just by way of an example, and other progress is on pursuing. This matter has been discussed. The Council of Defense with the Honorable Minister considered proposals for the way ahead, and further guidelines have been given for the next phase of the development. This process has been driven by the Secretary for Defense with the Chief of the SANDF. Then get to the next recommendation, and I've taken these recommendations by no means as a way of priorities, simply as they are indicated in the report. Officers commanding have been issued with the necessary delegations to improve effectiveness and efficiency within their areas of responsibility. Their management and command directives direct that they maintain effective discipline and promote morale within their units or their ships, and the areas of concern are immediately raised with their commanders. So this indicates that it's not merely that the delegation has been issued, but how the delegation is actually implemented. Communication is a fundamental part of the command responsibility, and it is required that officers commanding react and interact with their men and women regularly. And to do this, commanders ensure that subordinate commanders, and by that I mean, for example, General Ramlakhan is a commander, and he has subordinate commanders within the military health service. They ensure that the commanders understand their delegations. And what's more important is that the subordinate commanders are supported by their commanders in the execution of these delegations. And the empowerment of this will be done through the fact that a legal audit committee was appointed to assess the effectiveness of the military justice system. And their recommendations have been incorporated into the military disciplinary bill that will be submitted to Parliament in August of this year. So the next aspect of the recommendation is the defense budget allocation and the composition. On the 13th of April, the Minister indicated that the DoD budget is inadequate. It was indicated that the defense vote should be increased, and this notion was supported by all parliamentary committees. And we feel that further support of this effort to increase the budget is required. But what have we done about it? We appointed a task team, and it was headed by the Deputy Minister, have concluded the task on making recommendations to the CID to improve the effectiveness and the efficient use of this budget. And then one mustn't see that this means that the use was inefficient and ineffective. This is merely an effort to get the maximum efficiency and effectiveness out of this, out of the use of this budget. This report also included recommendations of another task team that dealt with the improvement of revenue collection for the DoD. We do revenue collection in certain areas, and in some instances those monies go into the state coffers and don't come back to us. In very limited instances that money is reimbursed to the DoD. Then a third task team has been appointed to make recommendations to the Council on Defense as to the allocation and the composition of the budget. The redistribution of the budget will address the short, medium, and long-term requirements of the department, taking full cognizance of the department's priorities and capabilities. And here we get back to my introduction, the force design and structure, as well as the capability and capacity of the local and international defense industry. Chet felt that this multi-focused approach has been taken to address this matter at the appropriate level of effort to indicate the dire need to increase the defense budget. The need for a new defense review. A further task team was appointed to undertake an extensive defense review to pay close attention to the mandate, the capabilities, and the funding of the DoD. So indirectly this relates to the previous task as well. The task team has submitted a draft strategy to the Honourable Minister, and she indicated this in the budget vote speech on the 13th of April, where she said that this will lead to a comprehensive public participation process and will include Parliament. So the state of the defence infrastructure has received a lot of media coverage, and a lot has been done, as indicated by General Ramlakhan, over the last 18 months. An interdepartmental engagement between the DoD and the National Department of Public Works at ministerial level has taken place. An implementation framework was agreed upon to address challenges faced by the departments. The deputy ministers gave instructions on immediate areas for implementation and guidelines on other areas that require further engagements by the relevant senior officials present at that meeting. So that was direct action that was taken. Subsequent to these interactions, negotiations at director's level took place in line with the spirit of the decisions of the two deputy ministers. This effort for the DoD to move away from total reliance on the National Department of Public Works for maintenance of facilities is work in progress and has been pushed at the highest level. And this was reflected in the Deputy Minister's address on the 13th of April as well. The various sections within this discussion on infrastructure, and the next one goes about the transfer of ownership, custody and repair of defence property functions. Because the engagements between the DGs of the departments focused on the development of a service level agreement between the departments as required by the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, GIAMA, to address the management and custodianship of these responsibilities. This process is at the final stage of completion for approval by the DGs. The changes at DG and ministerial level of the National Department of Public Work impacted on the progress and completion of this service level agreement. This progress, however, should be finalized at the end of this financial year. Now we look at the establishment and funding of the defense work formation. And Chair, I must indicate at this stage that the document that's handed out might have minor changes because some of the information came in and a few things have changed recently, and one of them is the naming of the defense work formation. Was previously the Defence Works Regiment. The DoD has advanced in the establishment of the works formation. The macro structure has been approved, and this enables the works formation to function as an approved and funded capability. It must, however, be stated that the works formation is already operating and executing certain renovation projects of facilities occupied by the DoD and is embarking on close cooperation with the Department of Public Works on the execution of planned maintenance projects. It is continuing with building its capacity in the technical training environment to fully undertake facility maintenance functions. It is planned that the works formation will be fully operational by the end of this financial year. Then it's important to mention specific progress at specific units. With regard to the concerns raised by the Commission on the facilities at Doornkop Military Base, contractors are on site. With regard to the military base at Lens, where 21 South African Infantry Battalion is found, a team has been deployed to assess the impact of the dolomite situation there. The DoD is awaiting the dolomite survey report from Public Works. From this report, a decision will be taken on maintenance and repair at the base. So this may sound that nothing has been done, but it's important to establish that the Dolomite situation there will support maintenance in an environment where possibly it might be determined that it's better not to actually use that place at all and to relocate. The works regiment has already identified phase two of planned maintenance projects at Lens, should the report be positive. And then, Chair, there's an overall plan, a maintenance plan, which is part of the DoD user asset management plan, and that is in place. And priority has been given to residential facilities of soldiers to afford them habitable living quarters. And some examples are housing repairs at the infantry school, that's in Oudtshoorn, the Army support base in Potchefstroom, the naval officers mess in Simonstown, and two military hospitals at Wynberg nearby. Chair, the next recommendation was about professional health support. And this pertains to the recruiting and retaining of healthcare practitioners. And that's the priority, to sustain the services rendered by the military health services. The solution to this problem has been presented to the Commission and to the Chief of Human Resources, because it goes about the retention, the recruiting. Efforts to improve the situation are ongoing, and the budgetary requirement to support this effort is being considered by the task team that was mentioned earlier on, where we discussed the redistribution of the budget. One would then assume or understand that the allocation to the South African Military Health Services should be increased if it's possible. So the next recommendation regards the transport. And here the South African National Defence Force has attached a high priority in ensuring that transport is being provided where required. This required the reprioritization of the allocations, that budgetary allocations, to rejuvenate transport fleets. Efforts have been made to pool vehicles to serve members in specific areas. In a number of areas, including outlying areas, it has been reported that transport used in conveying personnel from places of residence to their places of work are roadworthy, serviceable, and in a good state of repair. And so here it's important just to ensure the House that this isn't only because of the Interim Commission's finding. This is something that is an ongoing process within the services and divisions to improve transport facilities. The SANDF also provides subsidized transport to certain rank levels, and this can be used to improve the situation. So that's when an individual has a vehicle that is subsidized by the department, that owner of that vehicle can also use to support his colleagues. And then an initiative, the negotiations with the public and private sector with regard to the use of their services by the SANDF at reduced rates, is an effort to improve the situation. So the issue of career management is expressed as follows, that plans are being developed to ensure that career planning is visible to individual members. And in the text that you have, we refer to succession planning. Well, it's more than that, it's career planning. This improvement in transparency regarding career progression prospects should contribute to improved morale and to curb premature exits of personnel. And the most important factor is that the SANDF career management policy and promotion policy is being reviewed as a priority, and this will be finalized by 2011. And this is also something that has been ongoing for a while, because the huge amount of factors that have to be considered when reviewing these policies. In terms of the military skills development system, that is also being reviewed to ensure a better system, and this policy should be completed by September this year. Transformation, the recommendation, the answer to that, a clearly formulated plan has been reviewed to ensure aspects raised by the Commission are addressed. Chief Director Transformation and She is under the command of the Chief of Human Resources, is charged with the responsibility of ensuring that issues of transformation are handled at a strategic level within the SANDF. This implies that the SANDF, on a continuous basis, monitors the transformation program, process, and progress within the ranks and makes intervention plans through staffing and recruitment targets. Top leadership has visibility of the progress and challenges with regard to transformation issues. Transformation is an ongoing process. The grievance mechanism. Now, here we're referring specifically to the new grievance mechanism because that's what the recommendation was about. This management system within the DoD is in the process of being streamlined and implemented within the services and divisions. Grievances are being captured electronically, and progress in resolving the inquiry will be visible to the higher headquarters. There are nodal points within the services and divisions where all grievances are received, registered, and forwarded to the relevant environments for investigation and feedback. This is monitored on a weekly basis. The majority of the grievances are related to welfare matters, service benefits, and service conditions. But this doesn't exclude other issues of grievance. The operationalization of the grievance mechanism was achieved through a project Swarang Ganang. And that was a successful project that is continuing to be rolled out. The command and control communication in the SANDF, an internal communication plan with the supporting guidelines, was issued for implementation by commanders at all levels. In many instances, it has been confirmed that the implementation has taken place. In certain instances, restructuring has been recommended in order to create the required capacity to ensure the sustainment of good communication processes. Commanders do carry out unit visits as their command function to enhance good communication. The survey has been initiated that will indicate the level of satisfaction of members with the communication in the SANDF, and that has been done by the Inspector General. Promotion and utilization. The recommendation that the SANDF review its whole system of promotion and utilization in order to develop radical, effective measures to achieve a fair, transparent, and efficient method of using the services of all its members optimally, and of ensuring that those who leave the service are properly trained and counseled in order to get rewarding jobs in outside society, is work in progress. This is an expansive task that requires much deliberation throughout the SANDF, and it is receiving due attention. Remuneration and conditions of service for the SANDF. The comments of the Commission are noted as they relate to the tasks of the Defence Force Service Commission. That's the task that the incoming commission will have. However, to advance this effort, the DoD is developing a remuneration dispensation which recognises military uniqueness for the SANDF from salary levels 1 to 16. This dispensation will be implemented in phases starting 1st of July this year. The Public Service Occupation Specific Dispensation, the OSD, for the public service, they have been implemented for nurses, social workers, medical practitioners, and legal practitioners. However, a specific OSD for military health practitioners is being developed. That's the differentiation between the civilian military, the civilian health practitioner and the one in uniform who is deployed. Special allowance for technicians was implemented on the 15th of March this year. The DoD will implement the OSD for allied health workers in May this year. The revision of remuneration and service benefits for level 13 and above will be implemented from January 2012. Pilots, navigators, air traffic controllers, fire and rescue workers will receive their OSD from April 2012. Combat officers, submariners, divers, surface vessel operators, hydrographic surveyors, intelligence operators and special force operators will receive their OSD from July 2012. The recommendation on the establishment of the Defence Force Service Commission, the Amendment Act was implemented, which provides for the establishment, and that process is underway. Recommendations emanating from the international benchmarking. The comments of the Commission are noted as they relate to the tasks of the incoming Commission. The signing of the Defence Memorandum of Understanding is being dealt with by the Defence Secretariat. That's referred to in the recommendation. The rank audit of demilitarized finance functionaries. The audit has been done. All employers have been placed on their corrected ranks and have been appointed in the areas of the DoD according to these ranks. In the case of the demilitarized financial officials, the Honorable Minister approved that their original pension benefits be reinstated, and the following will apply in these cases. An additional liability be created for the 1-in-4-year benefit cost since demilitarization. A recalculation of all pension benefits for demilitarized financial officials already exited, so those that have exited will not be they will not be disadvantaged. And then an actuarial valuation of the value of lost pension years and related contributions by officials is undertaken with an intention to correct their pension. The above will require an amendment to the pension rules. The officials who were placed on personal notches are being addressed through an exercise to consider a special dispensation that will ensure that they are no longer going to be stagnated. The group life insurance scheme is also being addressed through appropriate amendment to the rules and regulations. Chair, the last recommendation relates to the total wellness of the Department of Defense. An overarching well-being policy was written and is in the approval process. This policy captures the utilization of the military community development committees and the specialist support groupings provided by the chaplaincy, social workers and psychologists of the military health service under the leadership of base commanders. Once approved and implemented, this policy will go a long way in the augmentation of the total wellness of members and their families, clearly indicating that there is a process that already exists, but this will augment it. So in conclusion, there's much work to be done to rise to all of these recommendations, and we feel that this will be undertaken with the zeal and diligence that exists in the DoD ethic. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Officer. Colleagues, there are a number of issues which have been reported, and some of the issues are matters in progress. But we have also heard that some of the issues have almost been completely attended to. I will open the floor to the members, but before I do that, let me ask you again, while you are going to be taking hands, to look at the issue of the military command and the defense secretariat, just the relationship, if you could be able to capture it properly for us. We know that this was one area which needed some clarities. But if you could set the House at rest with respect to the normalization of the responsibilities as well. And then Yeah, the issue of the bases, most in particular the Lens military base, and the report on whether the dolomitic nature of the soil, the of the land there, is such that the base might have to relocate or maintenance can still take place. Yeah, the rate, I mean, the state at which the report is now, whether the report has been finalized or the report is not yet complete. And then, with respect to public transport, this is one very pertinent issue that we trust that the ministry will take it up in a very, very rigorous way, because we know that members of the police force are able to enjoy, you know, those discounts or that type of arrangement with the transport department, but most in particular when they are in uniform, whether it is rail, road, or air. So we just need a brief with respect to how far has the department taken up this issue? At what stage is it? Now, with respect to the issue of transformation, we will engage quite strongly with the Chief Director for Transformation, because we will need a presentation at a later stage where we would like to have a presentation on the demography of the various sectors of the SANDF, just to look at the rankings, what the situation has been like since we received the report, I mean, some 5 years ago. And then we also appreciate the fact that the system of promotions is something that you are looking at. And I believe this is an issue as well that we can be able to look at in details at a later stage. Lastly, the issue of the exit mechanism. It's unfortunate because the last reports years ago, we were informed that it was a bit difficult for some of the most elder members of the force to leave, because pension provisions were not proper, and that secondly, the DOD did not have a proper exit mechanism, because at that stage it was the problem of resources. So personnel had to remain in their post for a very long time despite the disadvantage in age. So we are looking forward, I don't know, but possibly when the review is being done, that there should be a proper exit mechanism for members of the force, both socially and economically, to ensure that they are able to live a normal life after their service. Can I open for members to make input and ask questions, and let's engage with the presentation. I've noted Honorable Dennis, Honorable May, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, my first question will be an explanation why AMSCO is not here. You will explain that at that one, why AMSCO is not here, but I'm going into this one now. On page 8, on infrastructure, I see that this report is saying that contractors are already on site. Now, my question is, why is it the DOD not using their own skills? Why must contractors be given this work again? And then a follow-up question on that one is, what is the amount and was this work been tendered for? And what was the amount tendered for?
Thank you, Chair. The key recommendation of the Commission is that there be a full-scale defence review, and you referred to this on slide 12 of your presentation. And of course, our expectation is that there would be a full review of the Defence Force's mandate, of its force design, and of its budget, and it would result in a force structure which is fully costed over the life cycle of the capital equipment that we purchase. That is the expectation. Now, my question to the panel is, when will this process begin? What process will we follow in the defense review? And how long do you expect the defense review to take? That's the first question. The second question, Chair, it's a little disappointing. It seems to me that looking at the recommendations and the way in which the Defence Force are following up on their recommendations, it doesn't seem to me that there's any evidence of a radical rethinking of how it is we do things and a radical rethinking of the assumptions that we make. And let me come as an example the whole question of promotion policy. Now, in the Commission's assessment, they say that promotion must be on merit, earned both in operations and by successful attendance of appropriate training courses. Now, is that the new promotions policy that the Defence Force intends to implement or not? Because if it is, it will be a radical departure from the existing system and probably a reversal of policy since probably in the history of our Defence Force, probably since 1910. It's a radical proposal, and my question is it going to be implemented? Thanks.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Mine is a simple one. I had the Rear Admiral talking about task teams that have been formed. And what confuses me is that there's on slide number 5, we are saying a task team headed by the Deputy Minister has concluded this task. And then on slide number 6, that task team has been appointed to make recommendations to the Council. On slide number 7, a task team was appointed to. So I really don't understand as to how many task teams are there and where exactly are they reporting. Thank you.
First round of questions, and we will give honourable members a second bite. Can we hand over to the department for now to respond? But before that, my colleague will clarify honourable Dennis on why we did not have AMSCO today.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. The slot that we have today should have been a report by AMSCO. But as we know, the board has just
We've got a new board as of the 1st of May, I should think. So they requested that at least they be given 6 to 8 weeks to get used to what is happening and the handover before they can come and report. And I thought that was reasonable. So we just, in order not to lose this lot of today, because this presentation was postponed already, we requested from the department that can't we have this lot used for this report. So AMSCO will be reporting on the 29th of June, I should think. Am I right? Yeah, I think so. So it means it will be the new board that is coming to report. So this period is the period of handover. And I think there's going to be a formal handover where we will all be invited at some stage. Thank you, Comrade Chair.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the first question refers to the military command and the relationship with the Defense Secretariat. Now, sir, it's just over a month since the Minister of Defense's budget speech. And in her budget speech on the 13th of April, she did say that she promised to deal with a number of issues of policy review and that she has done that. She said that the long overdue defense review is here and that a draft is available that she would like to present. Sorry, I'm reading from the... She would like to present to the parliamentary committees at the earliest opportunity and thereafter would like to embark on a public consultative process before the final defense review is submitted to parliament. She also promised that she would deal with the vexing question of the repositioning of the Secretariat of Defense, and that has been done. There is a draft document of this proposal that she would like to present to the relevant parliamentary committee at the earliest opportunity. She also referred to the National Youth Service, defense industry, and she said that she awaits the preferred dates from the oversight committees and wanted to implore honorable members not to use these policy documents for cheap publicity stunts. I'm reading from the speech. There are processes that needed to be followed and et cetera, et cetera. What we're saying is that the minister has committed herself, and the way I understand the issues is that it's an issue of making arrangements for suitable dates. This then refers, I think it would not be appropriate for us to discuss the content of the documents here at this point. Given the undertaking by the minister, so that what she calls the vexing relationship, I'm aware that there has been a lot of work being done, but this needs to be finalized and the draft documents are there. So unfortunately, I cannot ask any of our members to give you further detail on that without the minister authorizing that it should be discussed. I'm going to ask General Masters to deal with the second issue of the Dolomite report for Lens military base. Your question was specifically, is the report finalized?
Thank you very much. I am the person responsible for creating the works formation and the works regiments. In terms of the Dolomite report in at length, it has not been completed. However, once that has been completed, we will then ascertain where Dolomite management can take place. But there are already plans in place in order to look and to repair certain facilities. In terms of the second question also that was put forward in terms of why are we not using own skills, there are contractual obligations with the National Department of Public Works that has been in place now for the last 2 years, so we are duty-bound to continue with those contractual obligations. That is in terms of Doornkop. So the money that was put in place for fixing up Doornkop has to continue. It's only when the works capability has the full professional ability in order to take over the full responsibility in terms of the technical professional nature will we be able to be fully operational and do all the work ourselves. And that is taking time presently. Thank you.
Maybe General Masters, you should just expand on where we are with the works capability. Members might recall we said that there was going to be a multi-year program in which skills were going to be developed to get a number of graduates, and then we're going to integrate that up to the stage that we said we'll have a full capability. But General Masters is the boss of that development, so maybe you'll give us a few more details.
Thank you very much, General. The approval of our microstructures we took place on the 23rd of March. We have now established the defense works formation, and that was done on the 1st of April. In Ireland, we have a total integrated facility management strategy in place, and that comprised of certain elements that used to do a fragmented approach to facility management within the defense force. So what we have done, we have merged the director facility support and management, and that includes the regional facility interface management structures that is in the provinces, and we took those elements of the defense force and we integrated them with the former service corps, and together with the project that I was managed, which was called Project Lebaka. We are now one entity which consists now of a formation HQ, which I am leading that formation, and we have already established 8 regional units. The total complement of the manpower in this new works regiment or works formation is 1,023. However, those are the macrostructures that we could complete by the 1st of April. We are however still continuing with the microstructures, which will give the micro post profiles that is required in terms of what is the full complement of strength that is required within every region. We are now going through a planning phase where we have identified capital projects that we intend to take over from the Department of Public Works that we are going to manage ourselves. And if we do not have the professional ability to do it in-house, we will also make use of outside service providers until such time that we have capacity. Presently, we have qualified artisans since we started the project of 98 qualified artisans. 163 will qualify in the next month, which will give us a total complement of 163 qualified personnel. We are taking in another 395 off the internal DOD members to increase that capacity. We have now given the instruction from the minister that we have to look for outside personnel in order to augment our professionalism. And we are in the progress of discussing with technicals, universities, looking at reserve members who have the professional ability, and including those young men and women who are now being taken up in the National Youth Service, and including also young men and women that are in technicals that are not able to continue with their technical studies because of whatever financial and domestic reasons, and we are going to recruit them to give them an opportunity to be trained and therefore try to augment our own professional services. So those are all the plans that we have in place in order to augment our capacity, and we believe that by the end of this financial year we would be a long way in terms of getting the necessary capability or certain percentage of what is required to take the full responsibility from the Department of Public Works. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, General.
Thank you, Chairperson. if we could move to the next issues, which are issues largely, so I will be asking General Difford to cover some of them. But we note that you have requested a presentation from our Chief Director of Transformation in terms of demographics, and we will make arrangements to ensure that it is provided as soon as possible. General DeWitt will answer the issues of public transport, the issues of promotion, the issues of exit mechanism, and we'll leave one out, which is the radical rethinking on promotion policy. We will address that separately. So the issues then, General DeWitt.
Chairperson, honorable members, I will start with the system of promotion, and maybe, General, if you will allow me, I will also touch on the review of the promotion policy. Now, the promotion policy, Chairperson, can't be seen in isolation from your career management process. Both are addressed in the recommendations of the Commission. Now, first of all, the Department embarked on reviewing its total career management process, and at the heart of that career management process is to harmonize the individual's needs with that of the organization and to ensure that the outcome of that process at least give a member proper succession planning, including its development planning of courses as far as 2 years in advance. That is the ultimate objective that we need to achieve. We started that process by doing an intensive desktop research in terms of international best practices in terms of career management, and then to implement also a proper IT system that will support the career management process. And that will ultimately leading to that development plans and eventually the visibility in terms of member succession planning. Honorable Chair, but at the heart of this, support of this whole process is the promotion policy. The review of the promotion policy is also in an advanced stage, and the new policy does not only look at one or a single criteria when it comes to promotion. It speaks about, for instance, a member's current performance and its potential as very important criteria. The DoD just approved the Plenary Defence Staff Council about a month ago the new performance assessment tool to be implemented in the Department of Defence. That process is currently in a roadshow through all the units being explained and implemented, and will be fully implemented and used for the first time with effect the next financial year. That includes confidential reports and members' conduct sheets. So a member's current performance and its future potential is very important factors in making a promotion decision. This includes things like what is the member's current status in terms of its military qualifications, its academic qualification, and then other factors like post availability and things like that. So that's a very comprehensive process that will take us far, where we integrate career management properly with promotion decisions. Chairperson, as far as the exit mechanism is concerned, militaries in the world normally use what they call the up or out principle in order to counter stagnation in moving up the ladder of the military hierarchy. Currently, the Department of Defense has a mechanism in place which is called, in abbreviation, MEM, which stands for the Mobility Exit Mechanism. This mechanism gives a member full departmental benefits as well as pension benefits, but as part of the remuneration process moving forward, there is a need to see how we can enhance this system in terms of improving its benefits. But currently we use the current MEM system, and at least it serves the department to some extent good when it comes to aging personnel and exit them, specifically those with long years of service and stagnate on a specific point. That as far as the exit mechanisms is concerned. The Surgeon General already talked about the transformation, and we will be ready at any stage to make a presentation on demographics, race and gender breakdowns. As far as public transport is concerned, apart from talks with the Department of Transport, talks are also underway with local government institutions, municipalities, in the areas where we find the concentration, like in our metropoles, to see how we can make use of the public transport systems which runs within the different municipalities and see how we can get a discount rate when soldiers travel in uniform on those transport facilities, either by bus and specifically by rail within the metropoles. So those processes are currently underway and in discussion with those local authorities. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, clearly more has to be done in this issue of public transport on our side. We accept that. On the issue then of exit mechanism, what we do have is a cabinet decision on the equalization of pensions. The minister has instructed that this be implemented. In terms of the current situation, the issue is with Treasury, and although we were supposed to have implemented from the beginning of January, the delay in Treasury has caused a situation in which, policy-wise, the equalization of pensions has been accepted, but there is some delay within the Treasury implementation of it. Then, on the issue that we raised of the task teams arose out of a ministerial directive at a work session last year, and there are four task teams. The first one is on effectiveness and efficient use of the budget, second one on redistribution of the budget, third one on improving revenue collection within the Department of Defense, and the fourth one was a policy and strategy review, which included the development of a defense review. These task teams have largely completed their work in draft format. They have to be first approved of by the Council on Defense, which includes the Minister, Deputy Minister, the Chief, and the Secretary. And once that process has been completed, I think it will then enter public domain and parliamentary domains. coming then to the questions that referred to the key recommendation being a full defense review, I think we've addressed that in part. Then the last question outstanding, the issue of radical rethinking about promotion policy. General Rivett has covered that to some extent, but I think we would welcome as a department any kind of radical rethinking about the way in which we implement our promotion policy. Clearly we are a department like most other departments that have unique features. The military is a calling, it's service. It requires a particular type of individual. The demands made on the person are not the demands placed on normal citizens. Our dispensation is therefore unique, and we have to take into account a number of factors. But I don't think we will discount the successful practices of the past since 1910 in this review, because it is this successful practices that have actually resulted in us being able to carry out our mandate. Now, the issues then of whether we will be considering just training and operations, that kind of a dual focus is possible only during a war situation. During times of peacetime, we have to consider a number of other things, since the opportunity for operations is limited, and one must be fair across the board. Certainly in terms of training there is no loading of standards whatsoever, except in rare cases, members must be fully trained for the responsibilities that they require. However, in our country, given all the imperatives that we have to comply with, a member's potential to serve in a particular post as to be taken and given full recognition. That is in law, that is in compliance with the law of our country and with the best practice in the public sector. So whilst we are reviewing this, we are taking all factors into account. Some of the things that we've alluded to are things that we've been speaking about since 1994, but we haven't had an opportunity to make strong headway. One of them is the whole process of service within defense. We referred, General De Wit has spoken about it, the issue of up or out. We have militaries where if you don't go up, you go out. But that takes place in societies that do not have a high unemployment burden like our country. That takes place in societies in which the pension provisions for those who leave are already in place so that members will not suffer undue hardship. That takes place in societies in which the out actually means transfer to another government department or another job opportunity, usually at the same level, laterally, and new careers. We don't have that. So as a country, I think we are grappling with all of this, and hopefully we are making progress. But clearly, to judge from the commission's report and to and my own experience, when I talk with juniors, the first issue is, when am I going to be promoted? That is the largest number of complaints and demands that we have. But one has to listen, and one has to try the best within challenging situations. So, Chairperson, I do believe that we may have answered all the questions, hopefully satisfactorily, but we are ready for further questions or clarifications.
Honorable members, we will take a second round of time. both of you are noted. Just to say that with respect to the HR, the response from General De Wit, with respect to promotions, military quality and academic qualification, that these are some of the criteria which you are going to be looking at. There's no problem with this. But the most important issue should be that there must be an availability of opportunities for personnel to be able to study further. If you say one other criteria is academic qualification, obviously in the relevant discipline. Once those opportunities are closed to personnel, then it means this is part of the personnel that will go up or go out. In this instance, it means the personnel will have to go out. Now, we want to be able to see the creation of space for personnel to upgrade themselves. Once HR has done that, we won't have a problem. We understand all this in the context of development of personnel and the transformation generally. And then the issues of successful practice, you know, which has been inherited from the 1910s and so on, there's no problem. From those successes and the policies of 1910 up to now, with the review, obviously, we will have to look at what is good and what is still workable and what is still relevant for the promotion of the integration of the forces and the upward movement of the forces. Because we want to create a situation in which there will be truly and proper integration of the forces. Now, all those other problems which are part of the baggage of the 1910s, we have to discuss them. And we know that we can be able to identify them. So it doesn't mean when we talk of 1910, we are taking back and baggage of 1910. We are not going to do that. The report of the Air Force in 2006-2007, we will obviously subject it to the demography, you know, when the general comes to make a presentation about transformation. We don't want to end up with the same type of situation where the 21 Air Force personnel who come from disadvantaged background failed. And then they were taken to India, the 21 of them, and they came back with flying colors. We don't want to have that type of situation. And the current problem that we had in the past right now, when we spoke to women in defense and addressed them in August last year, the problem that again emanated from the Air Force was that African women are too big to get into the cockpit of the aircraft. And as a result, a lot of them could not be trainable. Now we are saying these are some of the myths which have to be dispersed. And the committee will conduct proper oversight. We will go back to Air Force, we'll go back to SAMS, we'll go back to the bases to ensure that matters of transformation are taken up by the department. This committee, Joint Standing Committee on Defense, is about transformation and the integration of people. And those directives by the Constitution have to be upheld by the generals and all other high-ranking officials of the Defense Force. Those who are not going to adhere to them, obviously we will make reports and make recommendations to the ministry. Those are some of the things that the committee will discuss, the issue of oversight and the visiting, and to check also the impact of the report and the impact of the improvement as a result of the interim commission report. Honorable members, I know that two of you. We can take two more hands. No problem.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question relates to the continued existence of immovable assets such as bases, physical structures, in terms of the defense review. And I'd really just like the assurance from the staff present that when they come to the defense review, they will look at our immovable assets within the DoD from the point of view of the training, operational, administrative, supply, whatever functions that are envisaged in that review, and then see what kinds of bases or immovable assets we require to meet those functions, rather than the other way around of saying, we have all these assets, now can we please invent a function to go with them? In other words, the review, I believe, and the functions that are identified should drive what kinds of immovable assets we believe are necessary going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I don't wish to put the General on the spot. I think his response to my question on the defense review was clear. The Minister of Defense is ready to present the defense review, and it's now contingent on Parliament to set the date. So my question to you, sir, is when will we provide the Minister with an opportunity to present the defense review? That's my first question, directed to the Chair, not to the General. I just then, a point of clarification, I don't wish to be misunderstood. The point about promotions and promotion policy is this. I believe that if you look at the history of our Defence Force and the transition from the SADF to the SANDF, that it is more a history of continuity rather than change. If one looks at promotion policy in the Union Defence Force and the South African Defence Force, it was highly politicized, and merit was only possibly one criteria. And so my point was, what we need is to dispense with the promotion policies of the Union Defence Force and the SADF, and that a promotion policy based on merit would be a welcome departure from the past. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My question, a short question, relates to the very first recommendation about the from the Interim Commission about the relationship between the Secretary for Defence and the Chief of the National Defence Force. The recommendation was that the Minister, the Secretary for Defence, and the Chief of the Defence Force should find ways and means to produce a definitive statement on civil-military relations in South Africa. In the briefing, we did get some sort of response to that, but I don't think it was lacking in detail. Can I just get the assurance from the generals that the Secretary for Defence or the Secretariat for Defence is totally involved in whatever planning is being done to find a new way of relationship of demarcation of functions between the two? Because at this stage we're only getting this side of the Defence Force itself. Can we get the assurance that the Secretary for Defence is totally on board in these negotiations and that whatever comes out of this will be something which is agreeable to both sides? Thank you.
Thank you,
Comrade Chair. Mine is not a question on the content of the report, but on the structure. The structure of the progress report would make life very easy for us if it could be structured in such a way that it tells us what has been done or what is going to be done by whom and when. Because our duty is to monitor what we have just said now. We are going to call you some other day and you tell us, what did you do about this? And you said, this person is going to, or this structure is going to do this on such and such a day and so on. There's nothing wrong with the report as it is, but the way it is structured, it's as if it gives you an overview of what is supposed to happen or what is going to happen. Even ourselves on our own, we are going to pull out what you are saying and make our own. But we will need you to give us maybe dates and something of that nature. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think maybe we should allow Dr. Kameda to speak for the Defence before we give you our particular slant.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, the Secretariat is involved. In fact, the Secretariat developed a proposal that was then discussed at the DOD work session with the SANDF, and we agreed on that, and then we finalized the proposal and tabled it to the minister for her approval. So yes, we are very involved. Thanks.
Yes, I think I just want to echo that is actually the case for the SANDF. We are waiting for the Council on Defence and the minister in specific to pronounce herself in terms of the recommendations for the relationship. Clearly, this is in line with our accepted approach in the previous defense review of civil-military relations as well. as well as legislation that in the Defense Act, but as the advantage of our experience since the Defense Review and since the legislation was passed in it. So I think it will be quite an interesting set of recommendations once it has been approved. Now, going to the issue of creating of opportunities for further study, and Chairperson, you said this must not be close to personnel. I'll ask General Devert to just cover that in terms of how we at present create that space.
Chairperson, the department has a very comprehensive program in place to develop people further, obviously in terms of military qualification, that's purely military courses. But then as far as academic courses is concerned, it stands on two legs. First of all, there's a program, what we call study at state expense, where members can apply, being selected in the different occupation fields of the Defense Force, to further their study at any tertiary institution to enhance and qualify them in the academic field that is properly aligned to their occupation that they practice. And such a program is run on an annual basis, and also it speaks to the members' career planning. Secondly, the academic program called Study at State Expense is being supported by a number of programs which we call short courses, which can vary from a one-year program course to a six-month course to even a seminar which runs over a short period and which is based on certain modules in order to enhance members' specific skills in their field of the occupation that they practice in the department. There are proper study boards in place that look at members' progress and that sits regularly to review the members' performance in terms of such study programs in the department within each service and division.
Chairperson, I must agree that as a Department of South Africans, the issues of transformation integration, we have had some very good successes, but we've also failed in certain areas, and you've alluded to them, specifically with regard to the Air Force and the like. I can assure you that as seniors, we are all required to adhere to state policy, and our performance is measured by that. At the most senior level, we are guided by the present demography of the SANDF, and we are required to show visible, tangible, and rapid progress towards the desired outcome in terms of transformation and integration. The issue, I think, of 1910, maybe it's an issue of misunderstanding, because when we use that term, I think it's just mainly to refer to the Union and subsequent, which includes the experience of the liberation movements, which we bring to the issue of promotion policy and the like. I don't see it as an issue of the SADF and the SANDF. I see it in terms of all integrating forces, what we can bring in terms of development of our fellow citizens, and specifically with regard to the development in defense. I do agree that with the SADF, if you look at the history, that it was highly politicized and that merit was ignored. That was not always the case. It certainly wasn't the case in some of the other integrating forces. But with any discussion on merit, we are bound to probably spend a whole day or weeks before we agree on what that is. And we would always welcome, I think, as a department, but specifically as SANDF, guidelines from the work group in terms of how we should be interpreting and which areas we should be prioritizing. on the issue then of the need for us to review the format in which we have presented this report, can we say that we will provide it to you within a week from now in the format that you require, tabular, stating what is to be done when? Because I personally am a great believer in monitoring and evaluation. I think that we should spend far more time on that than we do on setting of new policy and the like. And I think that if we are monitored strictly, it does help us achieve the aim. So we would, within a week, Admiral Green would make available to the committee in the proposed format this report that we have made. That leaves us with the issue which is very important, I think, which General Masters, feel free to add to what I have to say. When we do the review, and the review, or rather when we finalize the review, and the review then indicates that certain needs have to be satisfied, and those needs then must be matched against present capabilities and present capacities and what is new and what needs to be dispensed with, I hope that the experience of the late 90s, when we on paper decided that we would close a large number of bases and that we would withdraw from certain other important areas like the city of Durban, Navy-wise, Army group commandos and the like, we withdraw from the borders, that we don't repeat some of the negative effects of too much enthusiasm. What I'm saying is that today we find ourselves reversing the closure of bases because we've had to go back to border control because of the issues of pirates and the like. We've had to now increase our presence along the eastern seaboard. I hope that this will be a process, and I support fully what the honorable member is saying, that we must really apply ourselves based on need, not only in terms of present capacity and the like. However, the problem always is that we're dealing with moving targets. It's very difficult to predict the threat scenario of the future in a very unstable world. Those who hoped for a 1,000-year peace dividend, unfortunately, are disappointed. Given the situation in terms of wars internationally, compare us today with 1994. There are more wars taking place on the international level than there were there in 1994. So some of these issues are so difficult that it's very difficult for me to say yes or no. And I would have to resort to what my medical school lecturer said to me, that if you don't know the answer, you must say it depends on. So I would say it depends on the situation that we face at that point in time. Chairperson, I think General Masters, do you want to add anything on the issues of the immovable assets being closed?
Yes, General. Thank you very much again for the opportunity. In the integrated facility management strategy that we have drawn up and the approach, we are now finalizing the immovable asset register, in which we are now going further and developing into what we call the user immovable asset management program that becomes the responsibility of all services and division. That will give us a great opportunity of understanding our total facility requirement, and also it will give us an opportunity to do proper space planning. And there is a program in place and the mechanisms presently being exercised in order to do proper space planning to make sure that our full design, our operational requirements and the facilities in order to support that complements each other. And that, of course, is being brought about now with the finalization of the creation of the works formation on three levels. So we will have a policy and planning level. We will have the execution part, and we'll also have the responsibility of a day-to-day facility maintenance that becomes the responsibility of the officers commanding. That will then give us a first-hand and on-time understanding of what is the state of our facilities and whether those facilities are still required or whether we have to hand it back over. The added responsibility that has now come back to us in terms of the borderline protection, that has now put an added burden on us because we are now going back to assess what is the requirement to ensure that the borderline protection is properly carried out, and there have been a lot of degradation of the facilities down there, which is also now going to put an added problem on this new formation that we have just created. But yes, Chairman, we are looking at holistically, and as I said, in an integrated facility management strategy that is now going to be supported by the structures that we are presently created. Thank you.
General, we really appreciate you making yourself available together with your team. Honorable members, we are running out of time because there are this venue is actually earmarked for another meeting. We just got the notice. So I will thank you, General, and trust that we will keep our lines open. And we will be able to flesh out our program with respect to following up on matters raised by the interim commission. The oversight issue that we shall be planning to go to the bases and so on, and the various sectors, and the report that we shall be expecting on demography, race and gender, and then also a general presentation by the Chief Directorate of Transformation. These are some of the other issues that will follow very soon. We thank you again, General. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.